Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Coulter, why we can't go outside and play today?
Baby, because there's too much happening out there. We got misguided people in this world who turn to violence and use guns, and sometimes innocent people like you and me get caught in the middle of it.
Well, what's wrong with them?
Baby, I don't know. They need change in their lives.
Thank you.
Welcome to Black Wall Street USA for Thursday, April 22nd, 2010, with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. This is Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com, and I will be Mr. Carter's co-host for this segment. Black Wall Street USA is on the air every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. CBBN Talk on Blog Talk Radio, which is the show that I host, will be returning to air on Tuesday, May 4th, with a show that is very dear and near to my heart, and that is Jobs, Training, and Services for Youth. So join us on Tuesday, that's May 4th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for information that you can use as it relates to the 16 and 25-year-old age group, our very high risk age group. We look forward to having some great organizations coming out with some great programs for those upcoming shows. We want to thank you for being here today and for sharing in this opportunity to serve African-American businesses across the nation by calling in and being part of the solution. We appreciate all of you who listen to us live and those who check us out later in the week by listening to our recorded shows. You can visit our show page at www.blogtalkradio.com/CBBN and simply click on the show link and you can listen to any of our shows, or you can listen to all of our shows right here online. Don't forget to pass our show links on to your friends. That is how we grow. That is how you grow. That is how we get this information out. And if you have a Blog Talk Radio account, take the time right now and make us a favorite show and listen to us every Tuesday and Thursday. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. Press the number one. You must press the number one if you would like to speak to our guest or if you have a comment for our host. You may wish to listen to us on blogtalkradio.com/CBBN. You don't have to listen to us on the telephone. You can go right to the website, click on the link, and listen to us for the full 2 hours. Our topic this evening is, it's hot, people, it's hot, black leadership. Is this the best that we could do? We had a lot of comments about this topic this week. We're very excited. We're going to have some great feedback. When I presented this topic for tonight's show to Mr. Carter's question to me was, what does that have to do with business? Because you know that Black Wall Street is a nonprofit, but it's business-oriented. And I simply felt that the question needed to be asked, and I asked it, and I thought that Black Wall Street USA should be the one to ask the question. So as I prepared for the show, I reflected a little bit more on the topic. I'm a product of Chicago's public school, so is Ron Carter. Now, there are exceptional teachers in this school system. We all know them. And there are exceptional administrators. We know them. As a matter of fact, we met one of those administrators over at the Southeast Chamber of Commerce annual breakfast this past Tuesday, held at Chicago's Vocational Career Academy on 87th Street in Chicago. Ms. Marie Chambers Miles is the principal over there, an example of an exceptional administrator. And I might add that Mr. Carter was the keynote speaker for that event, and we want to extend our thanks to them and the culinary students who prepared the meal, who served us breakfast. It was simply an excellent event. We want to applaud Angie Williams, a member of Black Wall Street Chicago and executive director of Southeast Chamber of Commerce, for doing a fine job in putting that event together. I just want to get that out, want to share that with you. Back to the topic. Black leadership, is this the best that we can do? In the midst of all the efforts that are put out there by most teachers and by most administrators, there is something in the way, something very much in the way, and that is the politics of education. Now, this is my position. This is not the position of Ron Carter, Blog Talk Radio, Sonia Perdue. Now, it's the same way in the business community. So for me, it is a very important question, black leadership, is this the best that we could do? who is in the way of our progress and who is actually lending a hand to our collective efforts. Mark Allen, currently associate editor of the South Street Journal newspaper, will be joining us this evening. Mark Allen authors a weekly column analyzing the collective agenda of black leadership, and with more than 30 years as a community activist, we felt that he may well be able to answer that question. I'm going to tell you what really led to this. I pulled this quote off of Mark Allen's Facebook, and then that's all you have to do is give me an idea, and I was on my way. Mark states on his Facebook page, "I believe that black leadership has done the best that it can do, but it's not the best that can be done." What do you think? Tell us what you think. Call in at 347-326-9477, and we want you to be part of the solution. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Ron Carter, to the show. How are you this evening, Ron?
Anya, how you doing, my dear?
I'm doing great.
Right, yeah, you definitely kicked it off with this heck of a question, I must admit. It's a real profound question and one that we definitely have to address continuously as we get it right.
Absolutely. You're tuned in to Black Wall Street USA with Ron Carter and Sonya Perdue. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. Ron, let's do a little recap of what's happening in Chicago with Black Wall Street and Chicago's BlackBusinessNetwork.com. First, Black Wall Street Chicago will host the reception that leads up to the Economic Summit 12. And that's scheduled for Friday, April 13th, and that will be held at the offices of the South Street Journal located at 449 East 35th Street. Ron, tell our listeners what they can expect at a Black Wall Street reception.
Well, it's basically a fundraiser. It is a fundraiser. Partially of that fundraiser is one of the good things that came out of the efforts of members of Black Wall Street is that as we designated 75th Street as a Black Wall Street district, we are on our way of opening up an office on 75th Street. And part of the fundraising for our reception, which we have prior to every summit, is to have that greet and meet reception prior to taking care of the business. And this year reception will be an event to help raise funds to open up our office. And at the same time, we're going to have guests. We're going to have people that are representing each of the four districts, Black Wall Street districts here in Chicago, from 75th Street, Madison Street, Stony Island, 75th Street, and also one in the Bronzeville community. So this has given us a lot of work as we prepare to raise funds, but at the same time, we're looking at having a nice, enjoyable time like we always do. And so we get together, we network, we share ideas, and we have fun. Yeah, there will be spirits there, the other kind of spirits, not just the spirit of we're doing this in the name of Black Wall Street, but we're also doing this with some spirits that we indulge in as well. So it's going to be a real good reception like it always be, and there will be a wine sip from one of our members, Jan Lindsay. We will have a representative from CAPS that's going to be talking about labor for the businesses, and we're going to just enjoy that whole evening prior to taking care of business for our summit on May 22nd of this year. So we're feeling good about it. We do want people to come out to support us, to make their contributions with their activism and what we're doing, as well as their dollars, so that we continue to work on Black Wall Street. So we're feeling good about it. This is our 12th summit, meaning that this is our 12th reception. So we have a good base to work from, but we definitely want others to come and be a part next Friday at 7 p.m. here at the Black Wall Street, South Street Journal office at 449 East 35th Street. So it's looking good, Sonia.
It is certainly looking good. And you need to come by and see the art on the South Street Journal office walls, and some of that will be auctioned off. So come on back. It's a full night, people, believe me. It is a full night of activity, and people don't even want to leave at midnight, but you're going to we're going to close the door pretty soon. We're going to close the door. But they hang over, believe me. Now, Rod, this is all leading up to the Summit 13, the 13th Summit, which will be held at Holman Square here in Chicago on May 22nd. We're going to keep you updated on those details for that summit. But just briefly, Rod, just very briefly for our first-time listeners, what does a summit entail?
Well, we had a letter to the editor of South Street Journal that really set the pace of what it's about. People come to a summit thinking they're going to be coming to a seminar, thinking they're going to be coming to a conference, think they're coming to workshops. But when you get there, it's more like a United Nations of organizations passing resolutions, passing motions, debating about where we should go, what have we done, what we need to do, and the status of the business community, particularly the black community. We have an overview of where the city is at. One of our leaders, Harold Lucas, will be there giving a big picture of Chicago, and then we will be addressing our districts, and we will be addressing black contractors in the neighborhood. So there's going to be approximately about six or seven agenda items, but along with those six or seven agenda items, there's also a session at the summit where what we don't have on an agenda, we will have open dialogue so people can make resolutions on what we have not discussed. And this here is also a prelude to Summit 13, which will be August. So as we focus in on the Black Wall Street Chicago agenda, this is a prelude to our national summit that's going to be in August 20th to the 23rd of this year. So we're setting the stage at this particular summit on how we're going to push a Black Wall Street agenda throughout the nation.
That
so it's
going great.
To be intense. It's always intense. It always is. yes, it's always intense, and that's the spirit of the summit, opposed to just having a conference and a convention, so to speak.
Great, Ron. Thank you for that summation. You're listening to Black Wall Street USA with our host, Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. Our calling number is 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. We have quite a few people in the chat room. We want to thank you for visiting us this evening. If you would like for us to bring you on the air, please press the number 1, and we'll be happy to listen to your question or comment. I'm Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. Ron, let's go to a break, and we'll come right back with our guest, Mr. Mark Allen.
You got it.
We support organizations like Partners in Community Building, Inc., as they contribute to building up our communities by enriching the lives of others. Partners in Community Building is a nonprofit organization, and there is no charge for their services. PICB is a HUD-certified counseling agency, and here are just a few of the services available to you in the Chicagoland area. Foreclosure prevention, there's no charge for this service. Winterization, who doesn't need their home winterized? Cedar Energy Assistance and Furnace Programs. Even if you are paying your electric and gas bill on time, you may still qualify for assistance from Cedar. Home Ownership Counseling is available, as well as Rental Assistance Referrals. Partners in Community Building is located at 3424 South State Street in Chicago. For additional information and to schedule an appointment, contact PICB at 312-328-0873. Call 312-328-0873 for all of your housing needs. Ms. Bobby Ball is the Executive Director of Partners in Community Building, Inc. Tell her you heard about it on CBBN on Blog Talk Radio.
na 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 na. I'm not a groupie that follows the band, and I'm no good at one night stands. But I did put the wolf in woman, and I'm looking for a stepping man. Tell me, baby, can you dance? When I go out, I put on my face. My dress is in just the right place. Dab on that perfume that sits on the shelf, and I look so fine, I can wine and dine myself. But I put the wool in woman. I put the wool in woman. I put the wool in woman. And I'm looking for a stepping man. Tell me, baby, can you dance? I'll caress you all over till you quiver like jelly. I grew this smooth again. When it's over, you'll be the one to tell me I put the woo in woman. I put the woo in woman. I put the woo in woman. Yeah, I put the woo in woman. To be discreet, I'm an old-fashioned girl, a one-man free. So I don't need a man that hits and miss, 'cause I can put lipstick on and give myself a kiss. 'Cause I put the woo in woman. Yeah, I put the woo in woman. Yeah, I put the woo in woman. Not much time to live. I wonder why, when I have so much love to give. But tonight I'm not looking for romance. Tonight all I wanna do is dance, dance, dance. 'Cause I put the woo in woman. Yeah, I put the woo in woman. Yeah, I put the woo in woman.
Put the woo in woman.
back, and you're tuned in to Black Wall Street USA with Mr. Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, as our host. I'm Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. Join us today and touch the world. That was Carolyn Walden. I put the woo in woman. Her manager, Curtis Davis, is a member of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. And we want to thank Curtis for giving us permission to play Ms. Walden's song here on Black Wall Street USA. Let's welcome our host back, Mr. Ron Carter. And, Mr. Carter, can you introduce our first guest?
Well, how do one start to introduce not only a friend, a business partner, and a person that has been instrumental in moving the black movement for the past 30 years, sometimes being a thorn in somebody's neck, but at the same time, it's like pulling a thorn out of the lion's paw to make them become a gentle giant. With the long agenda that Mark has, as we have been associated with each other for such a long time, it gives me a great honor to introduce my colleague, my friend, business partner, Mr. Mark Allen. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thank you all so much for having me on the show.
Great. Yes, Mark, first of all, let us get a feel for who you are. And I'll turn this around based on your long history being in the movement and being an activist, and with all the remarks from the President of the United States calling you one of the dynamic organizers in Chicago, to Reverend L. Sharpton naming you a key figure in the next generation of leadership. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, would you be on 79th and Halsted, or what would you be doing if you weren't doing what you do?
Well, number one, I think that regardless of what I do.
I keep what 79th and Halsted is to ourselves there. Go ahead.
Well, number one is, you know, 79th and Halsted is where I grew up, and one of the things I prided myself on, no matter what I've been blessed to do in life in terms of success, you know, it's almost like the Jacksons or so. 2300 Jackson Street is always home. No matter what I do in life, 79th and Halsted is always home to me. So whether I was there just being an average ordinary citizen or being there as somebody who's been a little bit noted, but I'm always home, because that's one of the challenges that we face, is that a lot of people move on in life and somehow get amnesia in terms of where they come from and the need to move forward, but never leaving the base of what home is. And so that's part of our challenge as we move forward in terms of where leadership should be going, and not just where leadership itself should be going, but where our people play a role in not just watching from the sidelines, but getting in the game. And so for 37 years, it was on 79th and Halsted when I was 11 years old that my father took me to Dr. King's workshop. What a lot of people don't know is that, the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters today on 5th and Drexel, that's the legacy of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. But on 79th and Halsted, that was the last part of the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That was his Chicago headquarters for SCLC, Operation Breadbasket. So a lot of history was made on that corner in terms of our people, and we walk right by it every day. But ever since I joined there at 11 years old, I've never got out of the movement. It's been a part of me for now 37-some years. So, you know, God has blessed me to be involved early enough to have watched how our people collectively move forward. And I've been here to watch how we've come down. And grace be to God, I'm still here to look at how we move right back up to where we belong as a people. And that requires some more serious truth speaking to power. And more so than that, for those people listening, it ain't just about the leadership. I got something for you to do, too. So this is not about just what should the leadership do, but there's leadership in all of us that we've been missing and we've been disconnected. And now is the time through your radio program and others to connect these dots so we can begin to see the big picture where we belong.
Well, taking a look at the big picture, and especially looking at the big picture, how Chicago, not only is it the center of the United States, It also is the center of black leadership based on, naturally, the President of the United States is from Chicago. Reverend Jesse Jackson is from Chicago. Minister Louis Farrakhan is from Chicago. And Reverend L. Sharpton has proclaimed to start his national agenda, kicking it off in Chicago. So with Chicago being the center of leadership, how do you, get a grip on is leadership is the best that we can do, or is it all we can do? What is it that you see that needs to come from Chicago, given the historical problems, even if it relates to Mayor Daley controlling the leadership, taking for an example that he had a major influence in Barack Obama becoming president, even if it's behind the doors. He has had a relationship with Louis Farrakhan. He do have a relationship with even Jesse Jackson. So how do we get a grip on leadership? Is it the best we can do, or is that it?
No, I think, you know, you just hit something on the head, because to some people you have to imagine. Can you imagine? Think it for a moment. We live in this city that houses the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Minister Louis Farrakhan, the biggest black talk show host, the biggest black news publication, the biggest black elected officials, the biggest black churches, I mean, the biggest black athletes, and the biggest black consumer dollars. And with all that power, we can't get 10% of black contracts for our people. With all that power, our people are dying in the streets before our eyes, and we seem like we're just stymied. And you would just think that with this kind of leadership on paper, we should be leading the country in terms of having a much better economic condition for our people. And it's almost shameful to have the kind of power that we have.
Why do you say that is the case based on the leadership that do come from Chicago? Why is it that we're not where you say that we should be?
Well, one, because as we progressed as a people, you know, when you look at other people, have they moved on and spread out in terms of integration and so forth? Not only they moved out, but those other ethnic groups never lost a sense of their home community. But when it came down to black people, when we started achieving, we moved up and moved out and never, ever came back. And that was the problem we lost sight of as we were moving forward, moving up. We forgot to connect to the ground. So a lot of black folks moved all over the place, and when they got in trouble, they was up in the air with no place to land. And so now we're looking at the fact that we got to go back and reconnect the people in the air who just out there floating around saying, I'm somebody, I'm somewhere. But as they face challenges in terms of their jobs and economics and housing and so forth, they look back and don't see no base. And so now people are looking back and seeing that we got to go back and reconnect with the foundation that got us here in the first place, and that's the challenge that we face right now.
Well, you have been at two recent, national events. You just got back from New York, attending Reverend Sharpton's National Action Organization Convention, and I believe that you were at the Smiley's Black Agenda meeting that was held here in Chicago maybe about 2.5 weeks ago. With those two events that have recently happened addressing leadership to a great extent, what is your assessment of those two events?
Well, I think one, to some degree,
and if you
one
can
of the
give a kind of outline of who was at each one of them.
I think one, Tavis Smiley hosted an event in Chicago with national black leadership, asking the question: was there still a need for a black agenda in the era of Obama's presidency? Which is a valid question. I think we answered it. and we talked about it. Reverend Shopton, in terms of his leadership, brought another question to the table in terms of when we start moving on these agendas, it's time to put a measuring stick to what we want to see, when we want to see it. And it's almost like somebody fighting for affordable housing, but at the end of the campaign, realizing that they never defined what affordable was. And so what we begin to learn is, so while Tabitha Smiley's event did a lot of talking regarding the need, we proved that. But the thing is that 3,000 people rallied at the Tabitha Smiley Summit on a Saturday, but then by Monday, it didn't increase any activity in the street to enforce the agenda. So we got caught up in what Dr. King called a paralysis of analysis, where we analyze this, we analyze that, we analyze the analysis of the analysis, and we analyze so much that nobody breaks away from the analysis to actually go and achieve what it is we've been talking about. And so then when we moved on to Reverend Sharpton's summit, then he convened a whole number of national leaders in New York, but now the difference in his agenda was we actually spent time saying we've talked enough about the need. Now let's put on the table, what does this mean in terms of concrete agenda items that we can measure in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and see if it's bringing about the success that we're supposed to bring back for our people. So I was glad to be a part of both of them because both of those are two important dots. But now what's more important than all of that to our listeners around the country? Here's the real deal. Are you just watching what we do in terms of setting an agenda and hoping that some pie falls out the sky? Or are you getting off the sideline and finding your role in this process? And so that's the challenge that we face right now in terms of where we fit in. So many people are watching what we're doing, wondering what we're doing, analyzing what we're doing, but haven't decided where they are. And see, and that's what we're missing as a people, because during the 60s movement and everything else, when leadership said we need to go do issue A, they didn't do it by themselves. They had thousands of our people in the streets with them. Now we've gotten to a point that people think they can just tweet and text their way through a movement, and it ain't going to happen.
You have the situation, and this is one situation that we always kind of pound on, and that was the leadership versus the community will, as the election of Harold Washington, where leadership, for the most part, was not on top of that movement to elect Harold Washington, and the leadership eventually came aboard to help support Harold Washington. Do you think that there is an absence of people directing leadership, or is it more of people waiting for leadership? Or how do we combine, or does one take presidency over the other? Leadership versus...
I think what has happened is that a lot of people at the grassroots level, some people have gotten lazy. They've gotten apathetic. See, before we got into, you think about it, Dr. King and everybody led a movement and didn't have a fax machine, didn't have an email, didn't have a text and Twitter and Facebook. People were forced, because we didn't have all this technology, you had to go to the meeting because you had to go see somebody. You had to get involved in something because you saw your interest in it. Too many people today think that I can just Facebook and tweet my way to achievement. It ain't going to happen. And I think that what's happening now is too many people are just watching and they're judging everybody else but themselves. I mean, one of the things I realized is the black agenda, if you will, it ain't changed. What has changed is the mindset of the people who think that, you know, you got a generation of people who woke up with a remote already in their hand and have no idea somebody had to march and fight for the right for you to be able to have a remote. And so people have our consciousness had to be regained. But again, at the end of the day, people that are listening have to realize that they are the leaders they've been looking for. I mean, there's a challenge on the one level of people that have notoriety. But then again, you've got thousands of our people who sit. For instance, in Chicago, you've got over 8,000 people who filed charges of police brutality. Now, if 8,000 people filed charges of police brutality, why in the heck you can't get more than 50 people down to a march protesting police brutality? You can't just file your complaint, go sit at home, and wait on justice to fall. You've got to follow that complaint with the vigor all the way through, and that means marching, it means lobbying, but you just can't file. And so that's where people have to look at a lot of the movements that are engaged for black people. You got more white people running them. And you know, we fight cases of death row. Black people are the ones who get unfairly sentenced. But I'm telling you, after spending time outside of a death row case, there were more white people down there trying to save the life of unfair black people being killed unfairly than black people. So how can people who are impacted so much be sitting on the sidelines watching other people fight a fight for them, and they ain't in the fight? So that's why I'm telling your listeners, it's not enough just to say, I want to see better housing. Now, if you want to see better housing, and if I tell you today on Monday, we're getting ready to march for it, and you just sitting at home saying, what happened, that ain't good enough. And so I'm saying to people listening, everybody has to accept a new level of challenge. And I think a lot of us in this generation woke up disconnected, and we woke up, we've lost our sense of consciousness, but I'm telling you, we're just an attitude. We're just an attitude away from moving our people where they need to be. But it ain't just the agenda. It's about people. 3,000-some people can't get together on a Saturday yelling about they support a black agenda, and then by Monday morning, they're back at home as if they just went to a concert. They went to the concert. They saw the best in black entertainment, and when the show was over, they went on back home. That can't happen. That's unacceptable.
Well, you definitely got a lot in your 37 years when you keep on going. But let me ask you this, based on the position of the community and leadership. And I kind of used this example, I think, last week when we talked about the black cat syndrome, where the superstitions is that do not cross a black cat. And then when you don't cross a black cat, most cats somewhat kind of only cross your path when it's safe, and people not realizing that. Do we have that type of black cat syndrome where we've been programmed to think that a black cat is not safe, or are we having this syndrome that getting involved is not safe? Or what is it that can ignite? You did indicate that, you know, something can be on the horizon, but is it the leadership waiting for the people, or the people waiting for the leadership?
Well, I think, number one, that part of our leadership, if you will, is disconnected from each other. And they're so busy resolving and being successful at their own individual thing.
Can you give me an example of who that leadership you're referring to?
Well, I mean, when you go across the board, for instance, we're dealing with Chicago violence right now in the city. Now, everybody says we want to stop the violence. Everybody says, what can we do? And so I'm saying, if everybody says that, then if I, for instance, say to the people that might be for a gun lobby, good example, I was talking to Ronald Holt today, the father of Blair Holt, who was killed in Chicago. Ronald Holt and others in his leadership crew have been 101% active in passing new gun laws. And sometimes they may get up to 1,000 people who call themselves Stopping the Violence by their campaign to get better gun laws. And yet, if I have a march over here saying, let's turn these empty lots in Chicago this summer to community gardens so that young people can work, but I only got 20 people supporting my cause, and I'm trying to tell Ronald Holt today, and he want to know, well, how's your march for community gardens dealing with Chicago violence? So he didn't really say it until I spent time saying, wait a minute, why you gun laws alone is not going to stop the economic desperation in these streets, and it's not going to stop far too many of our people who look to this illegal element in these streets to make money, and it's not going to stop the killing. You've got to stop people from going into the illegal element. So therefore, after you get through marching for the gun laws, then come over here and bring those same 1,000 people that march for the gun laws to march for these empty lots to be used, because that's going to help as well. And so just that example today of bringing us together on that common bond has to be done across the board when it comes to issues that impact the black community. Right here in Black Wall Street, we talk about the point of putting black products on the shelf. And if we call a meeting at Black Wall Street saying we want to put black products on the shelf, then we should have more than 50 to 100 people at the summit. You know, there should be thousands of people saying, I'm going to fight to put black products on the shelf, which is a good thing for all of us. If we want to put black people to work, we need more than 100 people and a couple hundred people. So I'm saying too many people are sitting and wishing on a star that things are going to get better. But as we moved on as a people, you know, we didn't get in black business wishing on a star. We got here because we marched for it. We got here because somebody died for it. We got here because we were in the game. And now you got a generation of people who want to sit on the sideline. I say this again. Technology, for all the benefits that it has brought us as a people, it's made a lot of people lazy. People don't want to come to the meeting because they text me the message instead of coming. People don't want to march because they got on Facebook and talked a good game about it. Uh-uh. Look at every other group in this town. If banks want to get bailed out, they fought for it. If immigration leaders want better immigration policies, they got in the street and fought for it. If gays and lesbians want some better things for the gay and lesbian community, they got in the street and fought for it. Well, if Hispanics want better law for themselves and money for themselves, they got in the street by the thousands and fought for it.
Now you get to the black community.
Wait a minute. All those examples, now you finally get to the black community. Where are the masses in the street saying, I want the same thing for me? They're too busy sitting on the sideline, texting their way through a movement and Twittering their way through a movement, but they're not getting involved in the direct action activities that got us the success in the first place. And we're not going to text and tweet our way out of this. People got to get back in the streets and demand and fight for what we got the same way we did to get us here.
There is a scenario as it relates to, as you know, in the Black Wall Street agenda, speaking about the what Chicago is going to look like in the year 2040. And the same can be identified with other cities across the country based on their 10 and 20-year plan of what the city is going to look like. Given that the city planners are in the process of doing just that and even implementing that, as one of our Stephanie Gatlin put it, that the tragedy that happened to public housing people here in Chicago, it is a shame on the leadership letting this happen. What I'm getting to is that as the city across the country are planning their urban development and what they want their cities to look like, and as many blacks are not involved and many blacks around the country are at the same level, whether it's Atlanta, New York, Oakland, Los Angeles, San Diego, even Gary, Indiana, are all on the same level. Can you view this here as a conspiracy based on a lack of information, or a structure that's in place whereby many people wonder what happens to a leader once they become a elected official, that grassroots is gone? Does something happen to people when they get involved in the system that nationally we all have the same identical problems as it relates to unemployment, lack of business, education? The issues are systematically all across the country. So, and as you indicate what other groups are doing, could it be a Willie Lynch syndrome or a conspiracy over black people that's making it hard for leadership to engage?
I think that one of the things I can look back on, being a young person caught up in the movement, there was not really a structured a vehicle of ensuring that there were a new generation of people following in the footsteps of those ahead of them. When you go into some of our little ethnic community stores, you see children watching how mommy and daddy run that store, and you watching those children learning how to run that operation, and they and they move up and continue that legacy. And then when it comes to a lot of black business, you know, we moved and got successful, but we really didn't build a foundation, because what you've seen is you've seen a lot of second generation children of some of our major black business leaders who grew up saying, I don't want to do what mom and daddy did. I don't want to do that and the other. And so all the fighting that we did to build up those black business legacies, doggone it, we lost it because another generation just sold it away. Because even though they saw the money that was made and the benefits symbolically that was made, they didn't have the same sense of social consciousness to somebody like myself who felt violated to march, to have my life threatened, to build up these black businesses. And here come another generation who just sold it away. And I'm like, I'd be damned. I mean, and so it's just a thing, whereas we've got to go back and reclaim the mindset, not just of our people, but the mindset of the people that are leading our people, because a lot of us have gotten to Negro amnesia. One of the things that Reverend Sharpton was telling some people that I admired, there were some very professional people who was telling people like Reverend Sharpton, I don't owe you nothing. You know, I fought for what I got. I went to school. I paid my bills. I got good grades. I've earned the right to have this job at this corporation. And Reverend Sharpton said, you must have some kind of Negro amnesia. You don't see the connection to how somebody had to be forced to even look at your resume. Your resume meant nothing to these corporations until people in the streets marched on them and demanded that they give your recommendations for consideration. So just those kind of current examples shows you that something is wrong with the state of mind when it comes to benefactors of a movement and those who actually participate in that movement. And so part of what our challenge is today is to rebuild that sense of consciousness. Because if your mind ain't made up that I got to make a stand, then you're not going to make one. And so, as much as we do at the leadership level, there's a lot to do regaining the consciousness of our people who are just sitting back watching what's happening, wondering what's happening, but they're not actually out there making things happen, and that's part of our challenge again.
Well, Mark, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to return and get more into black leadership. Is it enough? And just stay right with us, and then we're going to also take a call or two at the same time, okay?
Thank you so much. We're ready for it.
Thank you. You're listening to Black Wall Street USA. We're on the air every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our host is Chicago activist, Mr. Mark Allen. You know what, Mark?
Huh?
I'm a fan now. Man, I have not heard you break it down, Mark, before. I'm a fan, Mark. I'm a fan. Uh-oh,
we're
not going to get rid of them.
Very good.
Not going to get rid of them. Now, we're going to do these shows. We're going to do them, and we're going to do them until they listen. And I want to share something with you, because I'm out here promoting the show and trying to put the information out there. The topic, you know, on black leadership, can we do better? I want to tell you, when you speak about our lack of consciousness, when you speak about our unappreciation of what has happened before us, and I'm looking at Facebook, and the comment is, would you rent videos from YouTube? How many comments and replies to that?
Let's say that one more time. The response to what now?
The question was, will you rent videos from YouTube? It's posted. And now, how many comments? 72
will I
comments.
I'll just give
you an example of a comment on Facebook. And in fact, it receives 72 replies. You understand what I'm saying? That's
right.
A lack of social consciousness. As a matter of fact, that's unconscious. I was just replying to your.
I got you. And yet, if we say, will you join us for the march on Monday? Oh, yeah, good luck.
That's right. That's why I'm bringing that to the table. 72 comments. People had that kind of time and mindset. That's what's wrong with it. You're listening to Black Wall Street USA. We're on the air every Thursday evening once again. Our calling number is 347-326-9477. If you could share your state of mind with us, 347-326-9477. If you could share your true feelings with us, Our number is 347-326-9477. If you got a thought about the, our black leadership, can you share that with us? The chat room is open. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. Press the number 1 if you would like to speak to one of our guests. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to be right back with our guest, Mr. Mark Allen, and our host, Ron Carter. Thank you so much.
A successful special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size your special event may be.
Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. At Andy Clyde's, world-class service for our clients is standard. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists, and makeup artists, favors, daily plans for guests, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations.
Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. We are not locked in by guidelines passed down by corporate. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as dream weavers because we listen to what you want and get it done.
Our specialties are the vacation packages. Visit our website at www.andyclyde.net to see examples of what sets our services above others.
And remember, at Andy Clyde's, we are your
dream.
Trying to do the right thing.
That's some great music right there from Celia Frederick. She's an inspiration and a great entertainer. She's hosting her annual Hat and Glove Inspiration Breakfast Saturday, April 24th, over at the Power Circle Center, 9350 South Chicago Avenue. That's April 24th this Saturday. You can give her a call at 773-616-4297, 773-616-4297 for tickets. You listen to Black Wall Street USA with Mr. Ron Carter, our host, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. And I'm Sonia Perdue, the host for this segment. So sorry, we are not discussing YouTube today. The topic, Black Leadership, is this the best that we can do? And I'm going to put another comment out there. And we expect them to do better, people. We've got to do better. Let's bring our host back, Mr. Ron Carter, and I guess Mr. Mark Allen. Ron, what we're going to do, we got a caller on the line. Last four digits, 9135. We're going to go to that caller. Caller out of area code 708, you're on the line right now. Please state your name and your comment.
I'm Darius Randall, Illinois candidate for the House of Representatives. And I am indeed elated and honored to be a part of this conversation tonight.
Welcome, Daniel.
Darius Randall, and I am elated, but most importantly, black leadership indeed. This is a time for us to stand up, and this us that I'm speaking about, I cannot speak for the generation that has come before me, but I could definitely speak for my generation, that 21 through 35 generation, which I like to put a tag on the name of this generation and call it the Joshua generation. And I always speak about them standing up and working on my new book called The Joshua Generation. But leadership, leaders are made every day. Leaders are all around us, but we just, like a lot of people refuse to just step out into that leadership role. A lot of people are pew sitters, mainly with the Christian church, you know, and the Church of Jesus Christ, and those who go to church, a lot of them, speaking to a lot of them that have that power, that inspiration, that drive to lead, but don't refuse to, don't choose to lead, you know, and it indeed is a dying breed. I get a lot of heat and a lot of criticism for what I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to run for office as a 24-year-old young black man. I don't have...
You're 24?
24 years old, don't have a job, don't have the finances to do it, don't have political connections. Well, people always speak down and always try to criticize and tear down. But the fact is, what I'm doing is I'm available. I'm making myself available, and I'm answering the call. I'm not looking.
What prompted you to take this role?
Well, what prompted me to take the role is the time. And I piggyback on Dr. King's speech, Beyond Vietnam. He said in the beginning passages of the speech, he says, because the time leaves me no choice. My spirit and the time of the day leaves me no choice. And that's what really relates to me and what I saw. When I see kids dying on our street, when I see 40 children shot in one night, when I see so many people unemployed without a job, when I see our schools, services being cut and programs being cut, it's time for me to stop sitting back and stop criticizing using Facebook, you know, making wonderful, beautiful statuses. That's fine, but what am I doing to make it better? What am I doing?
Let me ask you this here, Darius. If you can identify with a particular leader that fits your Joshua generation, who would you identify?
I will most definitely identify with Pastor Charles Jenkins from Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church. And I would say Pastor Charles Jenkins because, first of all, he's a young pastor over there at Fellowship, he has been there for a little over 11 years. He came in pastoring when he was my age, and I can identify with him because the work he's done, you know, not to take any discredit away from Reverend Clay Evans, because he's definitely legendary, and definitely has done and laid the groundwork and a framework. But what Charles Jenkins has done, adding over 8,000 members to his congregation and all of the things he does in the community, it's amazing to see that from inspiring also a choir, the Joshua's Troops, you know, here in the city, who is also doing great work. That's a guy I can most definitely relate to. And
well, let me ask Mark this as it relates to your point of being the Joshua generation. Even to for me at 57 years old, and 20 years ago, a minister told me that I was the Joshua generation. And then Mark is a few younger than me, and that I think that he was called the Joshua generation. And now you stated that you're the Joshua generation. Who is the, what happened to my generation, what happened to my generation, and even to the point now we're talking about your generation, how do, if someone can help me out based on who is the true generation, and is your generation, Darius, is going to be the true Joshua generation? So I don't know if Mark or Darius, can you all help me out on that?
Well, let me say this. One, I appreciate Brother Darius calling, and I appreciate his spirit, because I went through those same challenges as a 24, 25-year-old, and people not wanting to accept you. But you stand up, you fight, and you learn. But one of the things I don't like to get involved in so deep when you get into this religious piece is because, one, you've got to study theology to the point of asking, when we throw out these symbols, did Joshua actually get us through? I mean, what role did Joshua play in terms of waking up the people? But if we say Joshua generation, then at some point, if we're going to keep following theology, let's go and actually see, did Joshua get us to the promised land? And if he didn't, then we got to take our theology one step further, because if Joshua only got us to a certain point, but never actually to that destination, then we got to go back and find out what part of the theology are we missing, because we've just identified through three generations. If Ron Carter, to Mark Allen, to young Darius, if all three of us at one point have been Joshuas, and we're still at this situation of today with all of this Joshua generation and still living in the murder capital of the world, then I'm telling you that we got to look and see who got us past Joshua. Because if all of us are still stuck at Joshua, then we got to figure out who got us to the next level where we got to go. Because one of the things is, if everybody who called themselves Christian actually got up every day and did Christian things like feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and look out for the least of God's people, then I'm telling you, doggone it, we would not be in the condition that we're in. So it's not enough, even in the church. You got 8,000 new members and you still got 50 people at the protest meeting. If you got 1,000 more people singing, you still ain't got 1,000 people swinging if they got two and marching. So I applaud all the ministers and the churches, but we got to get out of this entertainment theology where thousands of people can say, I go to church, but thousands of people can't say, I'm walking the walk. You know, we talk it, but you ain't walking it. So we've got to move to the next level. Is that the best we can do, is pack the pews, or do we got to do one step further and pack these streets? And that's what I'm talking about.
Darius, let me ask you this here. Based on the generation that you're at, and then again, looking at my generation and the generation that's after me, and then even the generation before me, and looking at the present young generation, I will come to the analysis and assessment that your particular generation is the worst that we have ever been. Taken for example, my generation was the 60s, where I was at 24 or so, we were part of the Black Panther Party. And so we had a clear definition where being the Black Panther Party was being hip. And the generation that you are in, being a hip hopper, is being hip. How do you assess where
your generation at, and if I can use the term, catch up with my generation of youth that were wearing black Tams and saying black power, opposed to your generation have no identity with black power, but where's the money? Is that making your job and your leadership position harder as you run? Because it'd probably be a lot easier for my generation to talk black power than your generation, or am I off base there? How do you assess that?
One thing that you, like indeed point out, and I applaud the comment that Mark made about the church doing so much entertaining and not enough information. And I thank God that I go to a church, Trinity United Church of Christ, where we are very socially
Trinity
involved.
Methodist?
Trinity United Church of Christ.
Same church I go to.
Pastor Moss is now our pastor. That is very out and going church and very involved in different various movements. We were just in Springfield on yesterday. We took a busload of seniors down to Springfield, and we was like a part of that 15,000 parents, you know, down in Springfield rallying against these budget cuts. So indeed, to the young generation, the hip hop generation, my pastor also wrote a book called The Gospel Remix, Reaching the Hip Hop Generation, and also to place a parallel to that, me running for office and reaching those young people, I have to go and reach them where they are. Like, I'm not gonna be able to get them all to come to a church, get them all to come out to a political action meeting, get them to all come out to this or that, but I can bring a political action committee to them. One of my many ideas I've partnered on is going to the clubs and doing a half club night, or, you know, the different nights that these clubs host, college night or juke night. I get 5 to 10 invites to come to a party, but when I send an invite to come out and to my political meetings, you know, they don't want to show. So what I came up with ideas that I could, I bring it to them, you know, and that's where our young people at. We have to be careful in how we approach them, because they can be teachable and they would like to listen, but are you going to sing or speak their language? One thing about the Black Panthers, what they did, they was very militant in their efforts. They did not agree with the different things Dr. King was doing. They didn't agree with nonviolent movement. You know, they like, you stop me and correct me.
Well, again, that's not necessarily true. They did agree with nonviolence. They just said, if you hit me, I'm gonna hit you back. But they did. They were a nonviolent group.
right. Yeah, that's what I mean. They carried rifles and they carried different weapons. Am I correct? Right. They did it.
The guns were not, violence was not the platform of the Black Panther Party.
Okay.
They would.
Let me say something too. You got to remember, see, people look at the end result and don't see how we got there. People, Fred Hampton, Mark Clark, Bobby Seale, the Black Panthers themselves did not wake up one day and say, "Let's get us an armed guard." The Black Panthers were that was a Black Panther defense. Piece, meaning
right.
that they didn't wake up saying, "Let's go on the offensive." They were under attack, and they took on the role of saying, "The Black Panthers are going to start a defense committee." And if people are shooting at us, then we got to be prepared to shoot back. And see, that's what happens is they look up. See, you get one part of the story when they say, "Look at the Panthers, send power to the people with these guns," but they never told you why. They had to go get the guns in the first place. We didn't go out saying we were going to attack nobody. We were defending ourselves, and people were upset. And they twist history when they make it seem like the Panthers was on some power patrol and had to have an armed army to get people in power with. No, they were telling people, if we are under attack, then the Panthers better start a defense committee to defend ourselves from attack. And so the Panthers, unfortunately, get a people, they get history rewritten on them, because you take it. It's like when they said with Malcolm X saying, by any means necessary, they showed me the gun in his hand. That picture was taken with a man holding the gun because somebody put a bomb in his house.
Right. Well, let's go to another caller if we can, Sonia.
Yes, we can. You listen to Black Wall Street USA. Darius, we want to thank you for joining us. Do me one favor and tell us,
ma'am,
what ward you're running in.
Well, I'm running the 29th district, I unfortunately don't sit over a ward. When I was sitting over a ward, but the 29th district is South Roseland.
Thank you. Darius,
do give us a call at the office, 312-624-8351. We'd like to stay on the line. Don't go nowhere.
Okay.
But give us a call at the office so that we can network with you.
Okay.
Sonia, we have another caller?
Yes, we do. Caller from Chicago on last four digits, 6249. I think they got tired of raising their hand. Let's go and see if they still have a comment. Welcome to Black Wall Street USA. You're on the air.
Yes. Yes, good evening. Good evening.
Good evening.
Monica Todd, how are you?
Okay, how are you, Monica?
Blessed.
Very
I'm listening
good.
To this young brother Darius. I pray that he stayed on the line because the issue I have with this generation is the fact that they don't know their history. And the issue I have with our leadership is that, speaking from a woman who is 45 years old, I was considered strange as a youth because I had a grandfather with a third, fourth grade education from the deep prejudiced South who taught us, those of us who wanted to learn. And once the seed was planted, it was hard for me to accept anything less than who my grandfather told me I was. And with that being said, we were always taught to use our ears and our eyes. And so with that, you have four multiplied by one, your mouth. Once it's closed, you can see and you can hear. And you can see what is not being said while they're talking, meaning they will tell you your history if you learn to close your mouth and listen. Not being insulting, but this generation has been fighting for their life as they were coming into the world, we can say from the womb. So I go back to our leaders when I say that the issue I believe Ron was speaking on a comment that Al Sharpton made about people reaching corporate America and saying they earned
the
right. That was Mark. Okay, forgive me. To earn the right to be there. And what I had come to understand before I became a parent is that a generation got lost because a generation was not taught the struggle. And with that, I mean, we rose to another level, but we gave what we didn't have, and we raised up a generation with a spirit of entitlement. And when we raised up that generation with that spirit of entitlement, they gave birth to this hot mess that we have right here. This generation of the teens are the ramifications of the crack baby. Directly or indirectly, in the urban.
Well, who would you identify, Monica? Is that correct?
Mark.
No. Monica? Is
the
you? I was going to ask you.
Uh-huh.
I was going to ask you who would you identify as a leader? Are you saying Mark?
Yes, I'm feeling the knowledge that he's producing because see, this is what this generation needs. You, it's okay for correction, and it's okay for them to receive correction, but they have to understand that they need correction, and they want it. They are hungry. This generation is really, really hungry for discipline and guidance. If you know nothing but anger, if you know nothing but rage, if you look at your leaders, I don't want to say the school because there's so much attached to it, but I was in one of the schools doing one of my programs with a group of girls, and they started calling some of the so-called mentors that were coming into the school poverty pimps. And they had come to the conclusion that you're only coming here. Okay, so all I want is what you're going to bring to the table. Yeah, I'm going to come listen, but where the food, where my trinkets, you know, that whole spirit of entitlement. And so many times people have written out an agenda for this generation, and this generation is not as dumb as people think they are, because if they were, they would all have been dead. They've been pretty much raising.
Well, there is a program now that the city of Chicago police department has indicated that they're getting ready to move in on quote unquote gangs this summer, and as identified with any trouble among youth, they are identified as gangs. So we definitely have to be careful about the symbolism that
mm-hmm.
the city of Chicago and the police department associate with our youth. Hold on. We want to go to another caller if we can, Sonia.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can. You're listening to Black Wall Street USA, and we're on the line with Ron Carter, our host for this evening, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. Our guest this evening is Mark Allen, who has 30 years as a community activist here in Chicago. Caller in the 309 area code, we want to thank you so much, so much for your patience. And we're going to bring the other callers on in a moment. Welcome to the show. Area code 309. Hello? Okay, let's go to the other caller. Area code 312. Area code 312, last four digits 2230. Welcome to Black Wall Street USA.
Hello, sir.
Wait a minute, let me
Chuck
do it again.
Barricon. Yes.
Okay, how you doing, sir? Your name and where you from?
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you, my brother. This is Elijah Farrakhan Mafuso. Some of you might formerly know me by my slave name, Mark Stevenson. And
oh yes, how you doing, sir? You changed. When did that happen? Or you always had it, but did not tell us?
No, this is a recent thing that has happened for me. I've been so blessed to have been renamed Elijah Farrakhan Mafuso, as my father had wished me to be named many years ago. But I want to thank you all for coming together. I've been listening, and I learned an awful lot about all of the messages that you all have delivered, and I bring you a message of hope, as I have myself been a teacher in the Chicago public school systems, and I lived a life of despair many years. But you know, I have to tell you, I read an article in the Chicago Tribune, and it was talking about our youth of the day, and it was saying how this is the generation that's going to take us into our future. This is the generation that may have to fight our wars in the future, and they're going to be the ones responsible for the growth of our country and how much trouble we're in. And we don't have a chance to be able to make it, to be able to compete globally in a global economy against all of the other countries. How could we possibly hope to survive? And it went on and on talking about all of the dismay and the lack of respect for elders and on and on. And at the very end of the article, it said that it was a reprint from 1918, Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. And it just gave me all the hope in the world, because I do believe that our generation today has many challenges, but I do believe that our young generation today has the greatest amount of strength in our history and the history.
What age are you referring to regarding the generation of today?
Well, I'm talking about the young people of today. They are indeed, as the young lady was saying, seeking leadership. They are seeking discipline. They are seeking guidance in a way that they've never done it before. It's us as the elders who have dropped the ball.
Can you identify a particular leadership that can assist in bringing that younger generation leadership to surface?
Well, of course I can. I'm being a member of the Nation of Islam. I can only speak to the facts that I have seen with my own eyes. The transformation of drug dealers, the transformation of dope addicts, people who have lost hope, people who in the past, we think that they cannot make a serious contribution to life who are seeking guidance. I have seen with my own eyes the FOI take these young men, that's the fruit of Islam, have taken these young men under their wings and guided them to be able to reach the next levels in their life, and embracing them with not just one or two so-called part-time mentors, but I'm talking about layers and layers and layers of elders who are playing the mentorship role to show them that they can reach the other levels in their lives. And this is the only system, this is the only system that has impressed me enough to give my life in return for being just a part, just to be a part of the Nation of Islam. I'm so humbled and so honored to be a part of the Nation of Islam because
Hi, Vanessa.
After
Thomas can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message.
Hello?
After in the Church of Christ and other churches, and I don't want to call out anybody and say anything negative about other churches, but our ministers, for the most part, have just failed miserably, just totally miserably at actually getting out of the pulpit and getting into the trenches, and that's what the Nation of Islam is doing.
Okay, Mark, Allen, can you want to give a comment, and then we want to move on to another caller?
I appreciate the caller, but let me just say this. One of the things that we've lost is our collective spirit. I mentioned earlier how everybody, when it comes to leadership challenges, everybody does what? They get on the defensive and defend, well, here's what I've done. So you get leader A that says, I saved 50 people and we're rolling. Leader B says, I saved 100 and we're moving. But at the end of the day, that's what he's trying to tell you. With the power of a Minister Farrakhan in Chicago, what he's supposed to represent, a Jesse Jackson, all this power. So in the midst of all that you're doing, how in the hell are we still living in the murder capital of the world? What the heck are we not doing that says that despite all your power and successes, and I'm going to tell you one reason why, because one of the things we came up with during the 70s was, if I could just help one somebody, I'd have done something. Well, I've come to find out that ain't good enough, because you save one and you lost 99. I'd rather get the 99 and miss one. And see, but when we came up with that mentality of, if I can just help one somebody, I done done it. Well, you know what? That wasn't good enough. Because every time we helped that one, we left another 99 behind. And now we got two or three generations of the 99 lost, that they out there developing an economy and a ministry and a life-death environment of their own. Because we, on the end, like I told Mr. Farrakhan on WVON a few weeks ago, that, do you know, man, it's been 20 years since the minister identified me as a young leader worth talking to, and he invited me to his house as a young leader with Lou Palmer and others, and I say, Minister, guess what? Why did it take 20 years for you to invite me back? What happened between the first meeting 20 years ago, and I appreciate you, brother, to 20 years later, we never, ever met again? There was some kind of disconnect, meaning, and so that goes across the board. And I'm just simply saying, we got to get out of what all the individual successes are, because we've been there, done that, you know, and we've isolated ourselves to this point that with all the genius that the Nation of Islam represents today, their restaurant on 7th Avenue Hall Street is closed because not enough of us went and supported it. And so, and Reverend Jackson is successful over here, but not enough. But when they're not, people not supporting it. So the masses of our people are looking up saying, despite your individual success, the masses of us ain't getting a doggone thing. So that's why the number one employer of young black youth today are the gang, drug, and illegal street economies, because despite your talk, here's how I'm eating. So when the minister gets
to
talking.
Let's go to another caller and move on. Yes, Sonia, we have another caller.
You listen to Black Wall Street USA. We're going to see if caller 309 is on the air, if they came back to the line, and give them an opportunity. Area code 309, are you on the air? I mean, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the air. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. And your name and where you're from?
Jan Lindsay, Peoria, Illinois. Member
hey,
of the
Jan
Black
Wall
Street. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to chime in this evening, and because the topic is hot, you know, if we're looking for anything to turn around, and this is just my personal opinion, for anything to turn around at this point in time is man is going to have to fall on his face and go before God. That goes across the board. That goes for the Muslims, the Baptists, the Apostolic, any denomination that is out there across the land, because we have an epidemic, and it's bad. I mean, it's to the point where we can't find our 18-year-old to 28-year-olds, even in the church. And as Mr. Allen just stated very eloquently, the number one employment for that particular group of people is drugs, violence in the streets. And the only way that we're going to be able to eliminate the process or the problem is go before the man who created us and ask him for an answer, because we are failing to.
If I can inject this question, and then I'm just going to kind of go back to two of the examples we spoke earlier, based on how the Black Panther Party evolved in its position, and also how the black political movement in Chicago, how it evolved with Harold Washington, and that was because of the issues that was put upon, even to the point of we have to look at Dr. King. It was the racism that was so blunt to the people that it wasn't necessarily the leadership that led the people to the movement, but the people felt a need to do something. So is the leadership versus the movement of the people, is it a matter of leadership waiting for the people to say lead us, or is it for the leadership to try to ignite the people?
Well, I think, again, you've got a level of leadership who've been conditioned to be satisfied with saving the one. Go look at all the brochures. All of them helping somebody, but somebody got to speak truth to those powerful people that it ain't good enough. This is not the best that can be done. Because
but right now, what can happen?
I'm gonna tell you exactly what needs to happen. One, again, people that are listening got to tie into something like we're trying to do with Black Wall Street and others regarding lifting them up. But we can't lift them up by ourselves. People that want to get help got to get help. But we're in such a desperate economic situation that whatever issue you're talking about, my friend, if it don't at the same time help me resolve my immediate financial crisis, I don't have time for you because I got to eat in the morning. And so what we're missing is that, and that's what the gang, drug, and the legal economy provide. I talked to a young man yesterday, just got out of jail. He's on the corner. He said, brother, I got home. Now, don't tell me not to sell these loose cigarettes. I said, well, brother, why? That's the only way I'm going to stay in this hotel. I got a link card. I got some food. But where am I going to take it? Where am I going to lay my head down? And so you might tell me about some pie-in-the-sky dream of where I can be in a week from now, but you have not answered how I'm going to make any money to pay for my room tonight. And so, therefore, whatever economy that is solving that issue is where that brother is going to lead. And I'm saying, and back in the 60s and 70s, people saw themselves in it because the movement meant I'm opening up black businesses for you to get a job. The movement is I'm protesting that company to get you some work. And right now is too many of our young people's dreams have been busted because too many of the elder leaders are too busy satisfying one generation of folk and the handful of others that keep them looking good, while, again, at the end of the day, the masses of our people in Chicago and urban cities around the country are making their money and living from the illegal economy that resolves their issue today and not from what needs to happen down the road. And so that's why I'm simply saying leadership needs to wake up collectively and go back and stop getting out of this paralysis of analysis. If we stop analyzing what the hell they're doing, just go do it, then we would catch the attention of our young people. Young people look up and see other ethnic groups. They fight for small business and they open. They fight for jobs and they get them. Then they look up and black leaders are still analyzing what the hell to do. And people are not
going
to follow that.
Going back to the question, of the show, black leadership, and I'd like to also just ask the callers that we have on the line, and if you can just give a quick reply, black leadership, can we do better?
We can do better. We can do better. And I'm Darius Randall again, 24 years old, south of Chicago. We can do better, and because we have no other choice. Because King made the choice in dying for his people, like indeed getting shot, you know, down in 1968. From that death on to his legacy that lives on today, still there's young people my age that, like, I always ask them, like, about Dr. King, and they can't tell me much about him. Because one thing here in Illinois, Black history is not mandated in these high schools upon graduation. They can mandate U.S. history. You can know about Abraham Lincoln. You can know about George Washington. You can know about Thomas
right.
Jefferson. But you don't know about Frederick Douglass, W.E.B. Du Bois. You don't know about Maya Angelou. Even with Dorothy Hite. Dorothy Hite just passed away this week.
So, but is that the fault
Hite.
Of leadership, or is
right.
that the fault of the education system?
I believe it's the fault of the education system. But, like, again, leadership, even from Mark's position, and even from your position, even from Sonya's position, and from the other callers who are older than me and wiser than me, you know, like in their elder generation, speaking down, reaching down to young people as leaders already positioned at a spot of teaching, teach them the way. Even, you know, you see a young man passing them along, do not let him pass by you without engaging him in conversation. Because
okay, next caller, can I get that question again to the other caller we have on the line? Black leadership, can we do better? Is that
yes,
Jan?
Yes, we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
Black
we leadership. Can.
Mm-hmm. How can we do better?
First of all, we need to evaluate. An assessment and evaluation of the situation is prevalent. I mean, it's obvious. What a plan needs to be developed on steps to take in order to consummate all of this mess that we've got separated among ourselves as a
but
people.
Is that,
because
as Mark say, is that a how you put it, Mark? The paralysis of analysis is.
It is, but again, there is no difference than today's Black agenda than it was in 1968. The fact of the matter is, those people who called themselves organizers got into positions of power themselves and stopped organizing. One of the most frustrating things is that some of the very people who used to be activists fighting the system end up becoming the system, and now they're explaining to people.
Such as who?
Well, a lot of our congressmen and aldermen and state reps used to be
such
activists.
Who?
Bobby Rush was a Black Panther who's now in Congress, but now Bobby Rush is a congressman, now has to come back and explain, even as congressman. Your district's still dying. Jesse Jackson Jr. is an activist. Danny Davis is an activist. Dorothy Tillman was an activist. Minister Farrakhan was an activist. Jesse Jackson was an activist. Everybody was a damn activist. And all I'm simply saying is, at some point, you got to a level of getting so caught up, and you moved up a notch, but we never protected the base. And so now you have now become the problem that you used to complain about. And I'm saying that goes for a lot of us. And all I'm simply saying is today, people have to, one, make up their minds. So even as we challenge leadership, like I said, coming out of these summits, it don't make a bit of difference if Black leadership says, I'm going to unite around something. If you still got people who want to sit at home and think they're going to text and tweet and Facebook and BlackBerry their way through a movement that requires not education, we become educated nuts. We're so educated, we forgot our doggone common sense. And too many of us as a people, Black Power Movement, people who didn't have no degrees, led us to where we are today, and now all this education, and we still live in the murder capital of the world. With all this education and every one of these Black summits that we have, we would never have them if it wasn't white corporate money paying for them. So once again, where the Black dollars at for the people we march for? They're sitting up there watching us die while we march for them to be rich. See, part of this is, if white corporate America decided we weren't going to have another meeting, we wouldn't be talking now. So we got a lot of waking up to do, not just from leadership, but people who sit back and watch things happen and wonder what happened, but they're not involved in making things happen. So while we shape up on the leadership, there's people who got to get there off their butts and get in the game. Other than that, you are just as much part of the problem as the leadership.
Sonya, can you imagine Mark Allen and Michael Carter on the same show?
I'm looking forward to it. Let me book it right now. Right
okay.
Now.
Okay. Okay. So Jan, as you indicated, to do an evaluation of leadership, and then from the evaluation of leadership, how would that lead us to do better?
Make them. The people need to stand up and make leadership do better.
Okay.
We voted for them. We put them in those positions, and we can vote them out. We need some thirsty folks that want to see change.
Okay, we have another caller that would like to make a comment on can we do better, and if we can, how?
I think that was all the current callers that we have still on the line.
Oh, okay.
I think they all made a final comment.
Mm-hmm. So that even as we ask the question of black leadership, can we do better? And as everyone indicate, yes, we can do better. And we did speak about what leadership should do and what the community should do. And as we spoke about the generations of which each of them have to do and what they have not done, and as the surrounding communities are still planning, taking, for example, on one of our earlier shows on the Chicago Black Business Network, one particular guest, Guy Williams, made the assessment that the black consumer or the black person have a net value of approximately about $16, whereby a white net assets worth assets worth is about $86. And Mr. Williams indicated that the black community net worth will never equal the net worth of a white at $89 opposed to $16 for a black. And he stated that for the most part, blacks never will be in parity with the net worth with a white. Do leadership, as we do an assessment and a measurement, I think is what Mark indicate, how do we measure our growth? How do we measure what we have done? Is that an indication of how much work we have to do, or is that a measurement based on Mr. Williams that we would never be in parity and equal to whites?
Well, let me tell you something. One is, people got to realize, one,
is that a good measurement?
But everything we do, Ron, starts with our state of mind. See, if I don't believe that I see you listening to what the heck you're talking about in the first place, then your analysis means nothing to me until you break it down to the point of, are you prepared today? Then look at these CTA cuts. Do you realize when the bus companies back in the 60s violated black people said, to hell with you, we ain't riding. Can you imagine today with all the CTA cuts, if a leader says today, stop riding the bus? Man, are you crazy? I mean, so I'm simply saying we got a mind problem when it comes to white people would not be rich white people if it wasn't for poor black people spending money with the people making them rich. But when black people start thinking again about the power that they got with their own money and their own minds, then they can see themselves in it. But right now, we're talking above the street level. And so all I'm simply saying is we got to go back and pick up our people in the streets where they are and show them where they fit in. But right now, too many people are tweeting and texting. You know, so I got 5,000, 6,000 friends on Facebook, and everybody got an opinion. Wait a minute, everybody got an opinion up until the point when I say, we need some money, and I need you to come meet with me. Oh, shit. So even with people who call themselves advanced and technology, when it comes to doing what needs to be done, the people that read us on Facebook and who listen to us today, they got to make up their mind who are listening that the next time we call, you're not going to sit at home.
Well, as we kind of wrap up the show, Mark, has been in communication with Reverend Al Sharpton, and based on what his agenda of implementation and measuring
exactly what type of progress that we're going to make. And as he indicated that he wants to bring his national agenda kicking it off from Chicago, taking into consideration what Reverend Sharpton is proposing with his national agenda and taking in consideration what Black Wall Street is doing, what do you project where we will be within a certain time frame in addressing Black leadership?
Well, Reverend Sharpton accepted the grassroots initiative from Chicago that we need to develop Black Wall Street districts. We need to build them in Chicago and around the country. He said that on his national radio show. Reverend Sharpton adopted the Chicago policy of holding Black banks accountable to the money that we put into them and how it comes to the Black community, even as we challenge the white corporate banks and their commitment. He's done that. So those two issues alone could turn Chicago around when it comes to redirecting the money back into the community from where it comes. But guess what? Reverend Sharpton and anybody else, that agenda ain't going to mean a bit of difference if the people who need to benefit from this happening don't get their butt up from behind this computer and get in the street with us when it's time to go confront that banker and tell him to his face and speak truth to his power that here's what we demand of you, man, and here's where we see it. So again, Reverend Sharpton has adopted the Black Wall Street agenda.
To engage Reverend Sharpton,
I'm telling
are you saying that it's the people to engage Reverend Sharpton to do the right thing, or are you saying that Reverend Sharpton and the Black Wall Street need to make sure they do the right thing? So who is the weight on? The people?
Reverend Sharpton has done the right thing by telling the world that I'm coming to Illinois and other cities. Reverend Sharpton did the right thing by telling the world. I heard the grassroots agenda from the ground on what we need to be doing in terms of access to capital and putting our poor people to work. Reverend Sharpton responded to what people told him. So the question becomes, when Sharpton comes to town, will the people who tweets and text and say, here's what you need to do, brother, when he brings it to town, will you get up off the sidelines and get in the game? Because what the white man is waiting on is, are we talking wolf tickets or are we talking serious business? Hispanics and everybody else been selling not wolf tickets. They had their people in the street by the hundreds and by the thousands, and Black people at home texting and tweeting. And I'm simply saying,
so well,
people
yeah,
got to,
I'm not
wait,
here.
No, hey, hear me now. Hey, let me finish my sentence. People got to get off. They've got to come and match their words. Now, they talked the talk. Sharpton accepted your talk. Now, he's saying, I heard your talk. Now, here I come to Chicago. Are you coming to walk the walk? And that means people listening. Are you going to show up?
Is that, again, putting the weight on Black Wall Street to engage the community, or if it's putting the people to hold Black Wall Street and similar organization accountable? And as you answer that question, we want to wrap it up and close out the show.
Well, people, you got to go back to what James Brown said back in the 60s. Are you talking loud and saying nothing? The challenge out to the people. If Sharpton accepted the agenda, it ain't on him no more. He did what you told him. And I said it before Nationwide TV. The question today, are those people sitting on the sidelines talking, are you talking loud and saying something, or are you talking loud and saying nothing? That's what people listening have to make up their minds on, because the reason is about to be crystal clear. Sharpton heard your call, but will you do what you got to do to bring it real? You can't shoot it from the sidelines. You got to get in the game. Get in the game.
Thank you. Well, I definitely want to thank Mark Allen for being on the program, and I want to thank the callers. I do want the callers to call Black Wall Street office at 312-624-8351, and all those listeners out there as well, so that we can actually engage in this Black leadership with measurable results. Sonia, how you like it? How you feel?
Oh, I like it. I like it. You know that, Mr. Carter. I set it up. I'm rolling it out. And this is only part one. This got to be done again. Now, we want to thank, once again, Mark, thank you. You know I'm a fan now. I understand why when We mentioned Mark Allen this morning in the meeting, which you were not in. They were saying, yeah, give me, what's the number? Where can I go? I want to listen. I understand now, Mark. I understand. I want to thank you, young man. I want to thank you so much for being
here. Thank you.
Here
thank you so much. And I want to thank the late Ben Hooks and the late Dorothy Height for allowing me to be a part of their lives. And so part of their spirit lives on in me and these words to hear me talking today. Thanks so much. God bless them.
Thank you, Mark. You've been listening
thank you so much.
To Black Wall, Black Wall Street USA with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. I'm Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. Join us and touch the world. This evening, we were discussing our topic, Black Leadership. Is this the best that we could do? But we know that communities all over the country have the same issues and concerns. And this is only our first show on the topic, believe me. I didn't answer the question. I'm going to save it for another show. We want to thank our guest, Mr. Mark Allen, and hope that he will join us on a continuous basis. We want to thank all of our Carter callers for their support. Please pass this link on. Please continue this dialogue. And tune in every week for more great dialogues just like this. Friday, April 30th, for Black Wall Street Chicago's reception, we want you here. We want you here at 449 East 35th Street in Chicago. That's where we want you. Every Thursday evening, tune into Black Wall Street USA with host Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, and myself, Sonia Perdue, and be part of the solution in sustaining and increasing black businesses. In closing, as always, in closing, persistence is the act of continually pursuing something in spite of obstacles, and I will repeat that. Persistence is the act of continually pursuing something in spite of obstacles, excuse me. Everyone, have a great evening. We want to thank you for being with us.
Good night, all.
Many miles and a little more you'll live. But how many times in your years to live you give? I want to give a little lesson to you. Now and then it may be of some use. A thought that may more and more,
something to believe,
something to believe in. Woman and man, since time began, sacrificed. Sometimes wise with the ways of love, kind and nice. I'm in the luck becomes somewhat hard. Bad advice helps to pull you apart. Money blues, you lose the family. And that ain't for me. I gotta have
someone to believe in.
Loving partners come in order when you start a friend.
Something to believe in.
Don't waste the time. I need.
a sign somewhere that said, everyone walking can always stumble over truth. But never you mind, cause we always get right back up and leave it there. Knowing we need a little truth. Someone. Everybody wanna go to heaven, but don't nobody wanna die.